Good morning, good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, whatever time it is you're tuning in for the Wilson Weekly with Graeme Home, your money mentor, and as always, Dr. Andrew Wilson. G'day, Doc. How are you?
Yeah, good day, Graeme. You look like you're in a different spot today. Where are you in the world?
I'm a couple of days away with the lovely wife. So Beck and I just whisked away for a few days. Got a couple of live events, as you know, back to back, and a few things on. So we just needed a couple of days of planning and bit of a break. So we're in lovely Noosa this week.
Excellent. Yeah, my neck of the woods. I've been a resident of Noosa on and off for a number of years and have some property up there. So,
I was expecting to see you at the cafe one morning, Doc.
Yeah, well, we'll work on that one, Graeme. But I'm in lovely Sydney today, been very humid and hot in Sydney. We had a couple of 40-degree days last week in Sydney, which was tough to tackle. We had the air conditioner on full blast. To offset, and it's still very humid and sticky here, but that's summer for you, mate. No getting away from it. And before you know it, we'll all be whinging about how cold we are. So let's all make the most of it. But I guess we could say the housing market's heating up now, certainly in terms of moving beyond the holiday hiatus that we have every year. We've got the auction market starting this weekend. Interesting to see how many numbers we get to begin the year. We had about 400 auctions in Sydney and Melbourne last year in the first weekend of February. We'll probably get similar numbers this year. So that gives us something to speak about. But as we always discuss, auction activity, weekend auction activity is a very good forward indicator of what's happening generally in the market. But we've got some big news today, Graeme. The first house price, home price report of the year. This is hot off the press, the January home price report. So it is the January quarter. That's the 3 months to January versus the 3 months to December. Other house price modellers have also sent their data out today, but they have had that embargoed until tomorrow, which, of course, is the 1st of February. But ours isn't embargoed. We send ours out on the last day of the month, straight hot off the press. So everybody gets the first with the latest from My Housing Market and Infinity, and that's what you'd expect, wouldn't you, Graeme?
I'd expect nothing less, Doc. If you're not first, you're last.
Exactly, and it is some interesting results, so we'll have a look at that. We've also got the first RBA meeting of the year next week, Graeme. Of course, this is a different year for the RBA. They've changed the goalposts to some degree. There will be fewer meetings, different environment. The Reserve Bank Governor has to front the media. You know, after the announcement of the result, and lots of questions there. So that'll be interesting. But we'll have a little bit of a preview of where we expect, or certainly what we expect the factors to be as part of that decision making by the Reserve Bank next week. So I'll have a look at that. And also, literally hot off the press today, we have the latest inflation data for December. And of course, that'll play a big part in the Reserve Bank's decision next week. So we'll have a quick, we don't have any slides on that because it is just straight off the press, literally. But I know the results, so we'll have a quick chat about that one. And also we had retail sales data for December released yesterday. So we'll discuss the retail sales data. Not a big surprise there because it did come out after that spectacular November. November's the big month for spending by consumers, of course, Black Friday. So no surprise that retail sales were down a little bit. So we can get going if you like.
Absolutely. Let's rip in.
Let's rip into
it. Here first, ladies and gentlemen, there's no embargo here.
No embargo here. Yes, you get it as it happens. So as soon as the last data is released through the month, we're modelling it and out it comes. And I think you'll find there's not a lot of difference between our results and other results of house price modellers. The only difference is you get it all first here, and I think that's important. So My Housing Market, and that's what we always are here at My Housing Market and Infinity, about the current state and future prospects of housing markets. And current state really is exactly what we're going to discuss today because we're going to start off with the latest home price data. This is for the January quarter this year. Retail sales, we mentioned, also we'll discuss, and what to expect from the upcoming RBA rate decision next week. So January home prices steady to begin 2024, steady results generally, and it does continue that underlying easing trend of growth rates that emerged over the final months of 2023. I've been having a number of discussions with media today around the reasonings behind this. It's no surprise, Graham. We've come through a very strong year in 2023. These things can't continue on without a driving force. Of course, a lot of the growth in house prices last year was catch-up energy, particularly in Melbourne and Sydney, that fell away in 2022. We also had a lot of demand that was pent up when we did have higher interest rates and a lot of scary headlines in the media, and that caused buyers and sellers to sit on their hands. But eventually those buyers and sellers came back into the market last year, and that released that pent-up demand, and most of that pent-up demand was satisfied by the end of the year. So it's all part of the cycle, Graham. Affordability constraints start to rise, higher prices, higher interest rates, and, of course, we still have high inflation, not as high as it was, which is constraining household budgets. So at the end of the day, it pushes buyers out of the market. So we have fewer buyers. And that's the good thing about this year coming up, is the prospects that we'll have a much more certain and reliable outcome for house price activity. Because we've moved through all those post-COVID disruptions, higher interest rate disruptions. And now we're sort of back to ground zero, if you understand what I mean. But of course, we've always said, we say this, and we've said it a few times over the journey, Graham, that, oh, hey, we're finally back to sort of level again, and then something comes along to disrupt it. So let's hope we don't see that this year, but certainly the prospects are for a much more moderate housing market environment this year. Not that we won't have any growth. I still think most capitals are going to record growth. And in fact, I think some of those capitals such as Perth and Brisbane that were the strongest last year, I think they'll continue to be strong this year. The question is whether they'll get those double-figure prices growth. But no surprise, we've started the year off with flatter price activity because it's also about the fact that this includes the January quarter includes, of course, January and December, which are holiday months, even though our methodology, our price models do tend to offset the seasonal factors. There's obviously still some seasonal factors in the early year data because we don't have the same mix of properties that are being sold, and because we have many fewer higher priced properties in the marketplace over the holiday period. That'll start to pick up when the mix will start to become more even. So there's more middle and lower priced properties as a proportion of the market through this holiday period. So, of course, that tends to push prices downwards. But we do offset that because we use a particular model that does that. But nonetheless, it is still a bit of an influence on outcomes. So let's have a look at the results. Enough of the chat. The national house price was flat, Graham, over the January quarter, and that follows 11 consecutive months of increases. So a pretty good ride there through 2023 until that December quarter result. And these are rolling quarters, of course, so we're moving every month forward by 3 months. So we get a nice, reliable and solid house price model. So first non-growth month, quarterly month since February or January last year, Graham. So perhaps no coincidence that January, again, has been a flatter month going forward. But I think, you know, anybody looks at that chart there, the national house prices, will certainly understand that last year was a very good year for the national housing market.
Definitely didn't see those 10, 20 or 30% declines that the media was spruiking, Doc. I can't see that anywhere in those 11 increases.
Well, it went the other way, Graham. We had nearly 10% increase in national prices. I mean, how crazy is that? It wasn't down, it was up, but it was up by as much as it was supposed to be down. I think they're going to have to revisit their career options or choices, those that make these forecasts, because you know, you wouldn't want to be a doctor or a dentist, something making these types of mistakes, would you, going forward? But nonetheless, it's all part of the game. And, you know, it I guess, encourages those that do get it right to continue on with what they're doing. And, look, it's okay, and it's a bit of a joke perhaps at some degree, you know, these doom and gloom headlines, as long as you're not making decisions based on that, Graeme, because that's when you can burn your fingers. Because we're not talking sheep stations here. We're talking Australian real estate, which is, you know, a big-time asset class. So flat over to start the year, but it does, in a way, continue the weakening trend that we saw emerging over last year. And as I said, that's due to affordability constraints rising because of such a strong year, high prices, higher interest rates, high prices. Generally, not just house prices, have started to squeeze buyers out of the market, and the satisfaction of a lot of that pent-up demand that was created in 2022 and early 2023. So no surprises going forward. And, of course, we discussed this as an outcome, and we did start to see that at the end of last year. So here's the numbers, Graeme. So Sydney just down slightly by 0.4%. Over the month, Melbourne down 0.2%. Brisbane still growing, Graeme, up by 0.9%. Adelaide just drifted back 0.7%. Perth again, the strongest performer over the month, up by 1.1%. Gee, how strong has that Perth market been, Graeme, over the last year? It certainly led all the capital cities in terms of growth. We do understand that Perth had a pretty down time.
I was going to say, Doc, it's come from a pretty low base. There's a lot of recovery, rather than growth there to get that growth bigger.
Absolutely. And look at its median house price, which has obviously grown significantly over the past year, but it's still growing well below Adelaide and Brisbane. In fact, it's nearly $100,000 lower than Brisbane. And, you know, Perth has the highest incomes in the country, mate. So, you know, I mean, it means you've got a lot more bang for your buck in Perth in terms of what your income is versus what house prices are. So no surprise that it's growing Perth stronger than anywhere else because it has affordability advantages and that's what's driving that market, as well as the catch-up, the decade-long catch-up I think we're going through with Perth, which really did tank at the end of the that last mining boom in 2012 and has really only been picking up over the last year or two. So, yeah, Perth, the best performer, up by 1.1%. The smaller capitals are still struggling a little bit. Hobart down by 1.1%, but Hobart tends to go up when everybody's going down, and then it goes down when everybody else is going up. So we look forward to a revival in Hobart this year, but it has had some quite strong years, Hobart, over the last 3 or 4 years. Darwin down 1.8%, but that Darwin market is a very seasonal market because of the wet and the dry up in Darwin. Yeah. It virtually means there's two market seasons up there. Canberra just starting to pick up by 0.2%. I think that Canberra market bears watching this year because it did have a flat period through the second half of last year, just some early signs that it would pick up. And as usual, looks like following that hotter Sydney market this year, through the early months at least. We'll see what happens. But when we look at the full year results, Sydney up 10% still, Graeme. Melbourne, the underperformer, up 3.2%. Similar to Canberra, I think that Melbourne market's got a lot of upside to it. Yeah. Still lacks a bit of confidence, but early signs are that that Melbourne market is picking up. No doubt the rental market in Melbourne is activating. And also I think the unit market for buyers is also picking up, more buyers for units in Melbourne as well. But Brisbane, Adelaide and Perth, real standouts there, particularly Brisbane and Perth. Perth up 17% over the past year and Brisbane up nearly 14% over the past year, Graeme. So they've been very strong performers, clearly the best performers. And, you know, we saw all that migration surge, you know, activate the Brisbane market through COVID. Everybody sort of fled Melbourne, fled Sydney, headed into southeast Queensland because they thought it was safer. That pushed up rents and prices. Well, they pushed them through the roof. And it was then like, okay, well, COVID's over, lockdown's over, so that'll mean that prices will start to, because the migration surge will end, so prices will start to ease. But it hasn't happened, Graeme. Brisbane still keeping on and most of those southeast Queensland markets, Gold Coast.
I know Rebecca and I, Doc, we actually sold a couple of properties over the weekend at the big auction event on the Gold Coast. And the median price has now cracked $1 million on the coast. And I sold a two-bedroom unit for $1.2 million on the weekend.
Wow. That's fantastic. Unit. Well, and this, the point is, Graeme, that it doesn't look like it's ended yet, that there's still plenty of upside. And, you know, people saying, okay, well, Gold Coast, Brisbane have had its boom. Like that was a year ago, but it just keeps on rising. So a very, very strong market still, and the Gold Coast particularly strong, as you've just with personal results have validated, you know, what a strong market that is. And, you know, those that got into the Gold Coast a year or two ago would certainly have big smiles on their faces, you know, in terms of what they've realized. Looks like you've got a big smile on your face too, Graeme. And it's not just the return, the capital growth. It's also, of course, the rental increases, which are still very strong.
The yields throughout all of southeast Queensland, Doc, are just phenomenal, but they're getting the growth that historically we only used to see in Sydney and Melbourne. We're getting that growth in southeast Queensland plus the yield. So it's just, it's phenomenal.
And that's the point, that usually high yields point to an undervalued market, but yields are holding, even though capital growth is doing what it usually does with an out of sync yield. It's because rents keep rising, so they're sort of keeping up with capital growth. So that means it's stabilizing the yield. So is this not a perfect world for investors in that sense? Big yields inclusive of higher rents and capital growth as well. So some very big results there. When we look at the previous peak, we can see that those strong markets, Brisbane, Adelaide, Perth, are all tracking around about their record prices at the moment. Sydney and Melbourne still down below their previous peaks of the cycle, which in both those instances was the March quarter 2022, Graeme. We forget about what's happened previously, but of course we had a very strong boom in 21-22. And Melbourne and Sydney house prices are still below where they were at the peak of that boom in the March quarter 2022. So it's still some value there, Graeme, when we discuss that, because of course that's, nearly 2 years ago. And since then, incomes have risen, rents have risen. So, it means there's still value opportunities in the Sydney and Melbourne market. Sydney's still down by 1.2% and Melbourne down by 3.8%. No surprise that the trends are mostly downwards when we compare to the previous month's results. Those arrow trends are mostly downwards, reflecting that easing in activity over the past couple of quarters. But as I said, this is exactly what happens with the cycle once it reaches its peak. And what we look out for is those that are moving against the cycle in the sense. And we can certainly say Brisbane and Perth are still climbing upwards, and they're certainly the good growth prospects or the top growth prospects at this stage for 2024. Unit prices fell away, Graeme. It's interesting with units. Units also had a strong year last year overall, but with houses they also fell away. But the period during that January quarter period, again, has some seasonal impacts. There's fewer unit sales activity going on through that period. So that tends to push the unit price down, particularly given fewer higher priced units in the marketplace. But I think it's interesting that even though we had a strong year overall in units, as we can see there, we had a strong year, just a dip down there or a settled period there over September. It was sort of the reverse of the year before, Graeme, because if you remember, units were the top performers during 2022. They outperformed houses, and last year we saw houses outperform units. So it was a bit of a balancing act between the 2 years. So I guess that's what we want to see, is that it all evening out, which I think it has. But a lower quarter there for units compared to previous quarters. National unit price was down marginally over that period, over the January quarter, down by 0.7%. And of course, the national price is a weighted average, Graham, as we know. So it accounts for the prices based on the volumes of sales in each of the capital cities. And we know that Sydney certainly takes the lion's share of the volume of unit sales, followed by Melbourne and Brisbane. So really, no surprise that the national price fell by a similar amount to the Sydney price, because the Sydney price or Sydney's contribution is the main volume for the national price. But again, look at Brisbane. Again, that southeast quiet Queensland energy. Brisbane unit prices didn't fall. They're up by 2.4%, Graham. Mm-hmm. Big rise. And, of course, Brisbane's not a small unit market. It's a big unit market.
Yeah.
We don't have to go back very far to see all those headlines that, you know, Brisbane oversupplied, Brisbane unit market oversupplied, you know, you won't get a tenant, you won't get a buyer for years in that Brisbane market. And now they're screaming for more units. You know, there is a queue a mile long looking for units either to rent or to buy in that Brisbane city area. And no surprise, we've seen prices rising even in the holiday period up by 2.4%. Adelaide down 2.3%. Adelaide and Perth are much smaller unit markets, Graham. So they tend to be more volatile in terms of their results. So, yeah, another big result there for Brisbane. Melbourne down a little bit over the month. But as I said, early signs are that Melbourne unit market is starting to pick up. I think there's a lot of value there, and we await the next few months of results to see if that follows through. When we look at the full year results, not as strong as for houses, Sydney with units up 4.7%. So that's about half what houses achieved, but it's the reverse of what we saw in 2022. So if we look over the 2 year period, it's sort of evened out. Melbourne up 3.2%, a similar result to houses. But look at Brisbane, up nearly 15%, Graham, unit prices in Brisbane. And again, we're validating again that very strong southeast Queensland market. Adelaide and Perth also strong results over the past year, even though, as I mentioned, they have smaller unit markets, so they do tend to be quite volatile. But nonetheless, Adelaide unit prices up 14.6% and Perth unit prices up 11.2%. Similar, the previous peaks for Sydney and Melbourne for units are still below where they were in 2022. Good value in that Melbourne unit market, Graham. Still down by 6.2%. I think those value perceptions will drive buyers into the Melbourne market. But Brisbane, Adelaide and Perth are all at record prices in terms of the cycle. Mm. So still some value there, particularly in Melbourne for unit buyers. And as we've seen with houses, the trends for the trend for prices growth is downwards over January, just reflecting the continual easing in activity that we've seen over the back end of the market following a very strong year overall. And that's just part of the sort of the cyclical rebalancing of our housing markets going forward. So I think it was a pretty predictable result, Graham, over the January quarter. You heard it first here, an easing, nothing spectacular here, just a moderate easing or a stabilisation of prices growth. Once we move fully through the holiday period, not that I think there was a lot of seasonality involved in these results. There isn't in the way we model our data. So, as I said, I think it's there's certainly no falling or crash activity here, and just a real nice setup for the rest of the year, you know, following what was a very strong 2023 overall. Now we've also got if those that are listening to the podcast, watching the YouTube, if you want to get a copy of that house price report, this is a link to the PDF file for that particular report, for the January house price report from My Housing Market. So if you take a snapshot of that, it'll give you a link which will take you to the PDF file, which will give you all the full details and the prospects for 2024 on the My Housing Market January 2024 house price report. So that was all very exciting, wasn't it, Graham? I can tell that you're on the edge of your seat, and but that's all. No, always. It's good, because it's good to start the year off. Here we go. We're off and running with our first house price data. Now, the latest data on the economy is the ABS retail sales data. Retail sales didn't surge over December. They actually fell. but they did surge over November. So retail sales down by 2.7% over the month. But this is the interesting thing, right? Even though they did fall over December, and that was expected because as we said last month, the November result was very, very strong. We expected that because of Black Friday. And even though it did fall 2.7%, retail sales are still, Graham, tracking higher than where they were a year ago, still up 5.8%. So we're still not tracking lower than where we were a year ago. So the consumers are out there still spending at the COVID stimulus package levels. So we're still reflecting a vibrant, strong economy where people are still spending, they're still confident enough to be, you know, out there as consumers, particularly with retail sales. So even though it was an expected fall from what was a very, very strong November, which we, you know, we know because of those Black Friday sales every year, our levels are still tracking higher than where they were a year ago and are still tracking higher than the COVID stimulus package levels. And when we look at the chart, you can see that, Graham. Just bounced down a bit compared to previous month because that was Black Friday. But you can see we're still higher than a year ago. And when we look at the numbers pre-COVID, we're massively ahead of where we were pre-COVID. And even accounting for more people through migration and higher retail prices as a result of inflation, it still doesn't account for the high levels of retail sales that we're still recording. Well, in fact, we're still around about 40% higher, Graham.
We still know, Doc, that there was no mortgage prison. There was no mortgage cliff. People have never been more ahead of their mortgages historically ever. And people have still got savings they're leaning on through the COVID stimulus era. So it makes sense that people are still out there spending money after being locked down and suppressed for years. Makes sense to me.
And they've all got a job and they've all got their choice of another job if they want it, maybe another five jobs if they want it. And wages are growing at record levels. So there's plenty of incentive to get out there and reap the benefits of higher wages in a very strong, still very strong labour market. Now, I'm not saying things aren't tough, that higher mortgage rates have certainly constrained some household budgets.
But they're still lower than they were years ago, Doc.
That's right.
So your rates are lower, but your cost of living has increased, but our wages have gone up.
And our biggest asset, our house price, has increased by 10% last year, you know, making us all feel pretty good in that sense. And of course, you know, yes, we've had higher interest rates. But for goodness sake, we started at zero, Graham, zero, nothing. You know, the official rate was zero. And our mortgage rates have gone from 4% to about 6%, you know, a little bit higher for some. But, you know, in context of where we were at the last increase in interest rates, which was a decade ago, we're still the best part of a percent below where interest rates were a decade ago. So, you know, and I think that's all part of the story, why we're still seeing these big numbers for retail sales, you know, that people are still, and you can't hide this data. It's, you know, it's quite clear that retail spending is continuing at least at the COVID stimulus package levels, you know, and we're yet to really see the impact on of high interest rates on retail spending, you know, and when we look at the real context of this, you know, how far ahead we still are above those pre-COVID levels, notwithstanding migration surge, notwithstanding inflation. It's still a very big number and still reflects what is a very strong and confident economy going forward. So we await to see, of course, coming months in terms of that. But, you know, the other thing is, Graham, and we're going to discuss this now, I think, you know, the prospects of higher interest rates are now diminishing. You know, I think if we've got any rate increases left, and we'll talk about that when we get the decision in more depth next week, I think if we've got any prospects of high, it's only going to be one or two, you know, notwithstanding anything coming out of left field. And the big thing to come out of left field would be a surge in the price of oil. But other than that, we've sort of moved through the peak of our interest rate cycle. Australia, the Reserve Bank's probably been maybe a little bit lucky that the times are working in their favour. Circumstances have worked in their favour. They probably should have had interest rates higher. We're well below where the US rates are, but we might just be lucky enough to end this cycle with our rates, you know, with our rates lower than perhaps, you know, they should have been, certainly lower than comparable global economies. So will rates remain on hold to begin 2024? We'll know next Tuesday at around about 2:30, Graham, when they announce their first decision for the year. I think it's going to be pretty easy, and I think it's likely that rates will be on hold. We've had the last of the data, which came out today, hot off the press, but we'll look at some of those factors that the Reserve Bank will be thinking about. And, of course, the first thing is inflation. That's why we have higher interest rates at the moment, because we did see inflation surge over 7%, which is the highest levels that we've had since the early 80s, early 70s. So it was a real breakout. It was due to COVID that we had all that stimulus. People were spending. They couldn't get their cars. They couldn't get their couches. Petrol went through the roof because the price of oil went through the roof. And that all worked its way into higher inflation. So hello, Reserve Banks, central banks, do your job. And their job is, you know, their law says that when inflation rises, you've got to push up interest rates to take demand out of the economy. That's what they've done. Of course, we've had 13 interest rate increases, Graham, since May 2022, which is a record surge in interest rate increases. Of course, it did start from zero, officially from zero, well, 0.1%, so that's probably zero. We did have an interest rate increase in November on Melbourne Cup Day, but the last result was a pause over December. And I think that we're likely to see another pause. The latest data on inflation showed another significant fall in inflation over December, Graham. Inflation down again. In fact, underlying inflation is now tracking at just 4%, Graham. So that's, you know, well down on the 4.6% it was over the previous month. And the trend is clearly downwards now. Now the factors that have pushed inflation down are house building costs are continuing to ease. Oil has fallen away still. And electricity prices, Graham, interestingly enough, fell through the floor over December. Now, that's because we've now got the we're accounting for these government support packages for electricity bill payers and now get very high subsidies for their bills. And that's taken electricity out of the household costs equation, which is significant because that has been driving up inflation. That's helped to pull it down again. You know, this is working in favour, obviously, of Reserve Bank having on hold. So this is good news. Another a sharp fall in monthly inflation. And the target for the Reserve Bank is 2 to 3%, Graham, for underlying inflation. We're at 4% now. So I guess we're in screaming distance of getting there. So this would be, you know, good news for the Reserve Bank.
I was going to say, Doc, they need to buy a lotto ticket.
Yes. It's worked out. It's worked out pretty well, mate. But there is a joker in the pack.
Poor old Philip Lowe with all his low acts. Now he should have went harder sooner. And, mate, the bloke sounds like he got ousted for nothing. They could come out smelling like roses at the end of all of this.
Ah, yeah, but wasn't just one mistake there, mate. But, yeah, you're right. But, hey, there is a joker in the pack, and that is that the latest data, and we've got to understand that even though we saw oil prices, its contribution to CPI fuel costs fall again over December, there is a lagged effect on the impact of the price of oil per barrel that we see internationally and the price at the Bowser and the price that then works its way into the CPI measurement, the inflation measurement. Latest data isn't looking good. And of course, this is very volatile, but oil prices have increased over the past week, Graham. So if oil prices start to increase again and there's a lot of shenanigans going on in the Middle East, then that will work its way back into higher inflation. And it's a very significant contribution to higher inflation. But all the other factors are broadly working towards lower inflation. We're not back to our target range yet. We've still got a way to go. And I noted that rents were up again by a record amount over the year, house rents, and that's a big concern for inflation going forward, even though there was some offset for that through the government's rental assistance program. So the government can't keep offsetting increases in rents, you know, given how strongly that rental growth is. But so we're not out of the woods, but the sun is just looking like breaking through from still a couple of black clouds floating around up there, right? So building costs are still falling. They're still high. Home rents are still rising strongly. And other factors other than inflation, we've started to see the unemployment rate just ticking up a bit, 3.9%, the latest data, which is now up from its lows, its historic lows of 3.5% through last year. Now, a lot of that is migration. Obviously, more people coming into the workforce is putting up the unemployment rate. But look, nonetheless, and the participation rate, it would have been even higher, but the participation rate fell because people are now not as engaged in the workforce. But nonetheless, that's a good number for the Reserve Bank because they can say, okay, it looks like, you know, we're starting to see higher interest rates work, at least theoretically, regardless of the other reasons. So that's what they want, to have some sort of a handbrake on spending. And if people get perhaps a little concerned about their job prospects, well, that's a start. But certainly the unemployment rate is still super, super low and still a super, super strong labour market. But nonetheless, it's moving in the right direction from the Reserve Bank's point of view. As we saw before, retail sales have fallen, even though they're still high, but at least they've fallen. House price growth, the Reserve Bank is a little obsessed with house prices. They keep putting the horse before the cart, or the cart before the horse, if you know what I mean. And they should be really ignoring what's happening in the housing market as a driver of interest rate decisions, but they don't. They made so many mistakes based on that type of an insight, you know, the ridiculous bubble scenario, which, you know, has completely discredited a number of those in the Reserve Bank who've ascribed to that particular theory. But they have continued to mention house prices as part of their decision making in for interest rates, which is a nonsense, as I said. But at the end of the day, house price growth, as we've seen today, is easing, so there's less concerns about that. And as I said before, our Australian rates are well below the US, but Australia's inflation rate is well above the US. So that sort of shows we're a little bit out of sync, so which is a bit of a negative. But the big picture is internationally, Graham, that the US and Europe are currently talking about, guess what, rate cuts. So the conversation there is about, when are you going to cut rates? Well, that's a stupid proposition, because the last thing you want to do is to cut rates in strong economies and then reignite inflation, for goodness sake.
Like, you know, pouring fuel on the bonfire.
Yeah, and rates are already still low, as we've mentioned, compared to the pre-COVID position, or certainly, you know, historically low.
Don't we have these funny things this year in America and Australia called an election?
That's right, Graham. Yes, I'm glad you mentioned that.
So if there's a bit of interest rate reduction spins and promises, that might help with the votes.
Well, maybe the pollies are trying to talk that one up, mate, because it's a good news story. But actually, it's a bad news story, because usually lower interest rates means you've got to stimulate a weakening economy. But this is the markets all trying to get a margin, all trying to get the suckers in there betting that interest rates are going to fall so they can make a margin on it and make lots and lots of money. And what do they care if they're proven wrong? I mean, I saw that the market, whatever that is, in the US, and gee whiz, is that not the biggest bunch of gobbledygookites you've ever heard in all your life, is what the drivel that comes out of the US financial media. And, you know, really, if you had half a brain, you just do exactly the opposite to what the media says in the US in regard to its financial markets. They are wrong month in, month out in regard to their forecasts on economic data. And it was only a couple of months ago, Graham, let me tell you this, that the markets were predicting a 100% prospect, 100%, so there's no margin here, that rates would be cut in the March meeting of the US Fed Reserve. They said 100% rates are going to be cut in March, right? And that was what they were predicting, and they were taking bets on that. People were hedging against that. or in favour of it. And guess what it is now? It's 60%. So I would have thought 100% means 100%, Graham. When you say something's 100% going to happen, it's going to happen. You can say 99.9% just to be safe or smart. And I don't think those American, financial journalists and maybe financial journalists generally aren't that smart if they're not at least hedging their bets to some degree by saying, well, 99.9%, we're going to get a rate cut in March. And then they say, oh, well, if it doesn't happen, that was the 0.1% chance that it wouldn't happen. Not 100%.
I think, Doc, that the weatherman or the weather lady might be more reliable than the Australian and US financial analysts and media.
Absolutely, Graham. But look, there's agendas here. There's money to be made. I mean, who cares? But if you start investing on the basis of this rubbish, that's when you start to get burned, right? And and they don't care because they'll be just putting your money in their pocket going forward. Yep. So I think the big picture is the fact that we have that conversation currently in the US and Europe around, even though it's nonsensical, about the imminent cuts in rates, despite very strong economies and still high inflation, relatively high inflation, I think that shows the conversation is nowhere near higher rates. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
There's no discussion anywhere of higher rates now. And I think that is the icing on the cake for the Reserve Bank because they can sit on their hands thinking, well, you know, we're as safe as houses here going forward in terms of having another pour. So I think we're just about, I'm not going to say 100%, Graham, but I'll say 99.9% sure that we're going to get another pause in interest rates. So we look forward to that decision next week, which we will discuss on the next show, and we will go through what the Reserve Bank actually says in terms of the notes to the meeting. So as we always do, that's it for this week, a big show. As we always do, we offer our wonderful little freebie, which is our My Housing Market Infinity app, house price value app. It's not value. It's what house current asking prices and rents are to tell you what a sense of what your home is worth. So we've got the QR code up there. If you take a picture of that, it'll give you a link to the app. You do need a password. Let me say that front up, and Graham will provide you with that password. Under certain circumstances, he will provide you with the password to this great little app. So that's the QR code for the app. And the app, what the app does is it gives you, for every suburb in Australia that has data, it will give you the current asking price, not just the median asking price, but the high and low asking price, not just for prices, but also for rents for every suburb. It'll also tell you the number of properties for sale or for rent in that particular suburb. You can filter the results for each suburb, for suburbs in each of the capital cities, each of the regional areas. You can filter for suburb. You can filter for the type of property, house, unit, or a townhouse. And you can also filter it, Graham, for the number of beds. This is fantastic. So you can look for a one-bedroom unit in a particular suburb and it will give you those results. We've got a screenshot there. We've used Blacktown as an example there for the particular app. And we can see there with a Blacktown house of a five-bedroom house in Blacktown, currently median price of $1.23 million, a high of $1.5 million, a low of $850,000. And there are currently 12 properties for sale. You can also do that for rental properties as well. Look forward to some updates, Graham. We keep saying this every week, and it is coming. We're going to have yields as well. We've discussed yields today, what an important forward indicator they are of the prospects for particular markets and suburbs, regions, and also they're a key to that decision-making process.
Very much looking forward to that, Doc, because with serviceability constraints at the moment, yield is a critical factor into what you can or cannot borrow when buying a property, if it's an investment, that is, of course.
That's right. And when you look at average yields on a capital city or regional basis, and then you compare it with a suburban yield, it can point you in the direction of a good value market, potential value market. So we'll look at yields. We'll probably filter that for a minimum of 10 observations, 10 sales, 10 listings. 10 listings to make sure we get a robust result. And we'll also maybe put up the top 10 suburbs in each capital city or each region for yield. So that'll point you in another direction. Now, this is invaluable stuff, Graham. And for those that are, you know, taking a scientific approach, which you should do to property selection or certainly to market activity and market energy, this is just another add-on to this app, which makes it a great part of the decision-making process for property. Next week, we're going to have the rent report next week, Graham. The January rent report, another horror story probably for tenants there. Yeah. As I said, all the forward indicators are that it's getting worse, not better.
Yeah.
I'll just give you a bit of a quick update. It looks like Sydney house rents have gone through the roof again. So after a period where they were reasonably steady, it looks like house rents in Sydney are now accelerating, which is really bad news.
We had houses and units in Sydney sort of aligned at $750 a week quite a long time ago.
Yep. Yeah, now it looks like pushing up towards $800 a week for houses, but we'll look at the latest data. Yeah, I know, which is a shocker. It's just a nightmare and no relief in sight. The February RBA rate decision, we've already discussed. We've alluded to December inflation. We'll have another quick look at that with the official data posted. And let's have a look at the home building approvals, which will be released later this week. Also, so lots of information coming up next week. Another big show, Graham. Where do you think you'll be?
Oh, no, I'll be back in the office. I'll be back in the office first thing tomorrow morning. So, had my
good luck with
couple
that.
Of days
yes.
of planning and designing and getting everything sorted for our community, and we're back into full swing. So,
yes, good on you, mate. It's we've started the year. As I said, next Saturday is the first weekend of auctions, so we can start talking about how the market's moving on a weekly basis as we do. And again, gee, that proved to be a fantastic forward indicator last year. We were talking that way all the way through, and it preempted all the price data. Those clearance rates are great forward indicators for what's happening generally in the market. So we'll have the first lot of those out next week, and we'll be able to compare where the beginning of the season is this year to where it was a year ago, Graham.
I'm looking forward to that, Doc, because we've got a masterclass this weekend. So our masterclass attendees this weekend will see that data before anyone else on Sunday morning.
And that's 100%. They will see it before anybody else, so we can really discuss what the market energy is beyond the January house price report. So that'll tell us what's happening with buyers and sellers on the ground, and I look forward to that. So great to chat again, Graham. It's been another great show, hasn't it? Lots to talk about.
Always.
First with the latest house prices, as usual. And next week will be pretty much first with the latest rents as well. So all good. And the interest rate decision.
We will indeed. And looking forward to Sunday. So we're going to have a big group of informed attendees from the masterclass who are going to be informed before anyone else from these auction clearance rates this weekend. So pretty excited for that. And we'll see you then.
Good on you, Graham. I'm excited too.
Thanks, Doc.
See you, mate.
See you, mate. Bye.